Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency. I am your host, Rainmaker. Today we will hear from Alex Steffens and Cheryl Vandegrift, two NeuroSpicy sisters coming together remotely to teach and support as many people as they can about autism and similar neurodivergence. Let's listen. I am here with NeuroSpicy Sisters Autism Coaching, and I've got Alex Steffens and Cheryl Vandegrift with me here.
Hi.
Alex. Hi.
So would y'all like to introduce yourself and how y'all came to be here doing this?
Ooh, that's a story. So I'm Alex Steffens, and I'm actually a graduate of Evergreen. I'm a former environmental educator, and I have a certified in early childhood development specialist. And Cheryl has a degree in psychology, and she's also autistic. So she gives the person first inside view of the actually autistic mind. And I've worked with CPS as a respite care provider for special needs children. And so I give practical tips for parents and families that help the family heal as a whole.
That's awesome. Anything to add, Cheryl?
You asked how we came to be here. The short story is my psychology degree has a focus in life coaching. So I was actually health coaching at first, not a personal coach, just a more of like mindset. I was on my journey of finding out about my own ADHD and autism, and also probably my daughter's. And it was just really weighing on me that I needed to probably approach my sister about actually doing autism coaching and education, because on my journey, I was, reading all of these frustrations from actually autistic people about things they were dealing with and all the holistic things they were dealing with and, all the parents and stuff. And I just really saw that there was a need for education from an actually autistic standpoint. And so I called her up and I was like, this health coaching thing really isn't panning out for me. Like, I feel like my heart is telling me that we need to start this autism coaching. And she's like, just say the word. So that is how we ended up here 2 years ago. And we've been growing ever since.
And so we started a private group, and she started doing weekly lives where she started talking about her autistic experience and that internal world. Because when she finally got her diagnosis and we figured out that she's autistic, a lot of things started falling into place for her. And some of that's like self-accommodations and self-grace and forgiveness and, you know, all of that, because as a late diagnosed autistic, you spend all of your life feeling like there's something wrong. And so I spent 6 months listening to her weekly talks, describing her inner world, describing how autism feels. And then she booked our first presentation with a North Carolina Homeschool Education Association. And I said, I still didn't understand what she was trying to say. And it didn't, we knew that she was trying to say something, but we were trying to translate it into a way that neurotypicals would understand. And it really felt like trying to translate an alien language into something that a lot of people wouldn't be able to understand or grasp. And so we jumped in with both feet. She said, I'm just going to book us. And if it doesn't make sense, then we just need to start getting like parental feedback or neurotypical feedback about where it doesn't make sense. And so I started with the visuals. And I think with the visuals, I went down a rabbit hole for 4 days because once I came up with that initial visual for the neurotypical, for the autistic Maslow's triangle, was that is when it started really clicking into place for me, and it started making sense about what she had been trying to say the whole entire time. And so then we expanded that concept into a 1 hour keynote, the autistic Maslow's triangle. We have been spending 6 months to a year developing it, creating slides, learning how to explain it, switching the slides. And I was listening to your podcast on Autism Acres, and I wanted to shout out Alan Young was one of the first people that I gave the presentation to, because I was like, does this make sense? Does this sound like a tin hat situation or groundbreaking? And he said groundbreaking, and you know, and he asked questions and he poked holes. And if you've ever met Alan, that's a lot of his personality. And I utilized him as a tool so many times over the years of like, does this make sense? And so we've developed it into a keynote. And then we had a friend of mine, she had us present to FESS, Family Education and Support Services, just to get a clinical touch on that. You know, does it pass a clinical psychology? Does it, or is this just pop culture, whatever? And they endorsed us. We're on their website, and they said it was mind blowing and changes the way that people look at autism. And so we felt more empowered than ever. And then we went into our presentation at our first homeschool conference, and we had 70 people, and they were parents. So these are lay parents. And this was a real aha. I feel like it was more of an aha moment for Cheryl, because she was the one in the room and I was joining virtually. And we were going through this really basic presentation on how to homeschool your neurodivergent child and some tips and how to, you know, manage things, how to talk about things. And she stopped me. I was speaking and she was like, I'm seeing a lot of confused looks, a lot of confused faces out here. Can we do just like a quick vocab check? And so she said, who here knows what stemming is? And what was it? Like one parent raised their hand out of a room full of...
It was probably like three.
Yeah, it was not very many. So these are people that are supposed to be advocating for their child, and they don't even have the language.
The difference between a meltdown and a tantrum, and how to navigate a meltdown, what an actual meltdown was. I was like, okay, this is not part of our presentation. Like this kind of education has got to be outside of this. I don't have time to stop right now and go over vocabulary. Like, this is crazy.
So it became really apparent to us, like, how are you supposed to advocate for your child and you don't even have that language surrounding what the issues are, if you don't even know what stemming is or a sensory diet, or how are these families supposed to be supporting their kid when they don't even understand or have that language around it? So, I mean, one of the things that we do in our membership, I will get into later, is there's a vocabulary check in the first week, because it's like a lot of these parents don't even understand the language of autism or have that level of understanding around the difference.
The pipeline, we realized that the pipeline they were kind of traveling down was realizing that something was going on with their child, fighting to get a diagnosis, getting the diagnosis, and then they are just handed a referral for ABA therapy and maybe some pamphlets for some area resources, and patted on the head and said, have a good day. Mm-hmm. They do not get any education for anything. So what they do is they go to the internet and they find these autism parent groups, and they think, these are my people. I will learn something in here. You know, there are people in here that will educate me. And what we found is that they're actually just kind of echo chambers of, you know, a lot of them maybe are educational, but there's a lot of them that are, you know, very victimizing, very, oh, poor me.
fix my child. Autism is like cancer.
People kind of start to do that and they just think that's normal. Like, so that is very emotion based. We take the emotion out of it and we are just giving you facts. Like, these are the tools. This is what your child's brain is doing. This is how you handle it. This is how you support them. Let's go.
Yeah. And it was just this weird expectation that to defer to the therapists, right? And so even if they have questions or have, you know, there was this, when talking to parents afterward, they said they did not feel empowered by their therapist to be partnering with their child. You're just supposed to parrot what the therapist is doing. And if you feel uncomfortable with what the therapy is, I've had parents in support groups that are just like, the therapist is telling me to do this, this, and this, and I don't feel comfortable doing that because it feels awful to do to my child. But they are so fear-mongered into thinking that this is what's best, or this is, you know, and so we're wanting to help.
They're labeled as the parents are being uncooperative. That is why the child is not progressing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
So, like, we really want to be partnering with parents to help them understand their kids better. And studies have found that autistic individuals that have family support are more successful, more happier, and their mental wellness is higher. My son has been denied certain services because his self-esteem was too high because we homeschool. And I was just, really, I don't understand,
like,
why.
That's the yardstick they go by, is how depressed are they? Like, mm-hmm. That's pretty sad. That's not the only thing that they should be going by.
Cheryl, what state are you in?
I am in North Carolina.
North Carolina, right. So, Cheryl, you're located in North Carolina. And Alex, you're here in Olympia. So, but y'all both run this organization. How do y'all do that in two separate places?
It's not too bad. We do a lot of business meetings on StreamYard. We don't stream. We just go in the back office and talk to each other. For the homeschool conference, they had a lot of AV equipment and stuff. So I just signed in on their computer and they had it already hooked up to their projector. So that helps in our group. We use StreamYard to stream our live streams. But yeah, it's a lot of calling in. Either I'm in person and she's calling in, or she's in person and I'm calling in, like this. We find ways around it.
Okay, so y'all are both providing services both here and in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's virtual. It's online. We have a website. So yeah, like, the pandemic really made working virtually a lot easier. And so we've been able to connect, and we do it just like this. One of us is usually in person, and then we'll connect the other person virtually via phone or Zoom or however it is that they want to be connected. And then our main program and our main support is all online and virtual too.
So y'all are talking a lot about autism, and y'all do work with ADHD and support that.
Yes, it's like autism light. It's the same.
There's overlaps.
There's overlaps. Yeah. And
I've seen that you have ODD and PDA, or oppositional defiance disorder and pathological demand avoidance, on your website. So I assume that you work with that.
Yeah, I have pathological demand avoidance. And literally just the other day, I had to deal with something with taxes. And I got dizzy and vomiting and nauseous because I didn't want to do it. And, you know, my brain, my adult brain says I have to do this, but the PDA was triggered. So it's physical, and trying to help people understand, like, your kid will literally get physically sick if you word things wrong. If you make it sound like a demand, it triggers a fight or flight like response. And even as an adult, I have to navigate that. And I have tips and tricks for that. And we have a whole entire training on that, that we just spoke about this last Friday. Last week, we did a presentation on how to homeschool oppositional defiance disorder and pathological demand avoidance. And those are two separate things, but we talk about them together a lot because the symptoms are so similar, that but the way you approach them are going to be different. But we talk about that too.
ODD and PDA, those two do not seem to get as much airtime, as it were, as autism and ADHD. Can y'all kind of go over those a little bit better, more clear?
Okay. Oppositional defiance disorder is usually linked to PTSD. And then if you want to talk about PDA and ODD, we're going to go back to the autistic Maslow's triangle.
Yeah, it starts with self-actualization at the bottom, and then we move up to self-esteem, and then we move up to love and belonging, and then we move up to safety and security, and at the very top is the physiological.
So physiological comes as an afterthought. And so you see that a lot in like hyper-focus, that you can get so focused on an art project that you forget to eat for days or something like that. And so we learn the neurotypical Maslow's triangle as part, for me, when I was a teacher, was kids can't learn if they're hungry or if they're not safe at home. And with autistic children, they can't learn if their physical body is like, with their sensory issues are not supported. So it's a very sensory based thing, that either they need more sensory input than the average bear or less sensory input than the average bear because they're too sensitive or they're not sensitive enough. Like for me, if your child is in a wheelchair, you are putting in a ramp, you're widening the doorways, you're moving the counters in your house so that they can get around the house. And I just find it interesting that autism is one of the only conditions that the autistic individual is expected to accommodate the neurotypical family and work around a neurotypical household. And then they'll go to therapy to learn how to live in a neurotypical household. And so part of our programming, and in the first month of our programming, is we do a house tour. And you get homework and you get assignments. So one of them is to draw a map of your house and start inputting autistic accommodations into your house and act like you have somebody with autism living in the house too. Where's their sensory room? Where's their quiet corner? What accommodations are we putting into our lives so that these people are better supported? And so then it doesn't feel so versus, it feels more like a teamwork. And that's where we're like, we want to pull the family together, because autism can tend to take over the whole entire house. Meeting parents that have been on wait lists for therapies for years, and they're scared of their child. They're scared to tell them no. They don't have clients that have food aggression. And I'm like, have you ever thought about putting a door up in the kitchen so that you can close and lock that door so that they're not coming in while you're trying to cook? And because that's a safety issue, getting attacked while getting something out of the oven or doing something hot on the stove. And you really need to start being able to put things in place where you can exist as a neurotypical person, cook dinner, you have a household to run, and that the person with autism is also supported. So
I want to say that the origin of not just your triangle from Maslow's triangle, but the original triangle that Maslow, in fact, got that idea from was the Blackfoot First Nations triangle, which wasn't originally drawn as a triangle, but it was conceptualized in this format. And it only has three pieces. And it begins actually at the bottom with self-actualization. And then it moves to community actualization with cultural perpetuity at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is personally my opinion, but that was kind of a corruption based in European ethics, mm-hmm. White ethics, that Maslow took that and made it into the Western headspace, which began with physiological needs, safety needs going up, belongingness and love and needs, esteem needs, need to know and understand, aesthetic needs, self-actualization with transcendence at the top. And that was also part of the Blackfoot Nations, that he like kind of changed that to fit the...
That's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not hard to Google. There's a bunch of different websites on it, but there's one particular. It's the buffalosfire.com, I believe is the website that has that article on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kudos to y'all for like kind of moving back in that direction.
Yeah. And just flipping it on its head and re-explaining. And we're having parents come up and just even just sharing that first little slide. I shared it with you in preparation for this interview of like, this is what we did. This is how we flipped it. Even just that, parents go, oh, that makes so much more sense. And I'm like, yeah. So even just that one slide of we're just opposite of neurotypicals. And so we are not broken neurotypicals that need to be fixed. We're individuals that have different needs and need more sensory support in order to mentally function. And so with the root of autism being self-actualization first, then they also have a higher self-actualization than most adults. So children on the spectrum don't have that adult over children hierarchy that most neurotypical adults have. They see it as a human to human interaction, and that humans don't have power over other humans. So then you get autistic children being diagnosed with ODD just because they are demanding to have an opinion or having their voice heard or being treated like an equal or having a say in their own, you know, whatever it is. They want autonomy. And so they have this extreme need for autonomy and control over their own lives that a lot of neurotypical parents don't get or understand because they're so used to like adults in charge over children. And then you're not going to get that cooperation from the children because they think they matter too. And that's, I agree with them. So ODD is more planted though in PTSD and a chaos brain. They thrive in chaos. And ODD is a lot more trickier than PDA because it's an external, they will pull other people into it. So if things are peaceful or quiet, they will get bored and they will start a fight just to start a fight because they thrive in chaos. Or that if things were peaceful before, then things are going to erupt and you are not going to... they just have this fight to fight and will do the opposite just to argue the opposite.
I want to say that outside of context of what we're talking about, that sounds quite a bit like certain personality disorders, such as narcissism. They can tend to stir up drama when they're not getting their supply, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But that is clearly not what is going on here, correct?
No, correct.
Yeah, can you clarify about that?
So then ODD is kind of more rooted in PTSD, that if they grew up in a chaos home or if they just have chaos in their brain, they have a hard time emotionally regulating. And so they would rather dysregulate other people. If they don't know how to regulate themselves, then they're just going to dysregulate everybody else. And they will fight just to fight. And it looks like vindictiveness. But they really do want to be good kids. They don't want to be fighting. So if you, one of the things that I say with ODD is you have to use the gray rock method. And you're right about that. Narcissism, autism has a lot of overlapping traits with narcissism. It can be another co-occurrence, but autism can also look a lot like narcissism, because with that self-actualization in that internal world, they have a habit of of thinking about themselves first, and then they have what? A hard time thinking about other people, having a hard time with empathy, having a hard time identifying or reading the social cues in the room because they're so in their own head and they're worried about their physical body and they're worried about themselves, that they tend to forget that their decisions affect other people. And so that can look like narcissism, but the root cause is different. And I don't know a lot about narcissism to talk all about it, but that it just looks like it. And so when you get to the root of it and you find out, oh no, it's not narcissism, it's autism. Because then the difference is when you say, oh, you hurt my feelings or something, this happened, the person with autism will feel bad about it and they'll try to fix the problem and they'll feel bad that they misread the situation. Whereas the narcissist is like, no, that was your fault. And so then with PDA, it looks very similar, that they will do the opposite of what you say and it'll come across as defiant or, you know, anything like that. But PDA is more internal. And so it'll look more like a freeze response. Maybe we're just sitting there. It's an executive function disorder, that even within ourselves, within our own mind, that if I say something like, oh, I should go do laundry, I just ruined my own chances at doing laundry because my internal voice said the word should. And that's a trigger word. And so even just speaking and thinking to myself, I had to change, because the way that PDA gets triggered and different phrases, like, you even have to speak to yourself like that. And so then it turns into, it's just an executive function disorder versus trying to get other people to pull them into chaos. PDA doesn't really care about other people. They just don't like being told what to do. And feeling like they have to do something makes them feel trapped and then triggers a PTSD trigger response. And they get really tense and they kind of get fighty. And, you know, so even if it's something that they want to do, you're talking to 3 or 4 year olds and they get really wishy-washy. Oh, I want to go jump on the trampoline. Okay, we'll go jump on the trampoline. No, I'm not going to go jump on the trampoline. Oh, well, then we're not going to go jump on the trampoline. No, I want to go jump on the trampoline. So it'll sound like that, because the second you say it, we'll
flips the switch.
It flips the switch and suddenly they want to do the opposite of what you said just because that's what you said. But they do want to go jump on the trampoline. But now that you want to go jump on the trampoline, like, now they can't, because that triggered that response that now it was your idea versus their idea.
I want to go back to the comparison between ODD and narcissism for a moment. I do know quite a bit about it. And one thing that there is in common there that I've seen is that narcissism is created through growing up actually in a toxic, abusive environment, having neglect and things like that. And, you know, quite often by another narcissistic family member. Mm-hmm. Some of the words that you're using are the same kinds of words that one uses when dealing with situations with narcissists, like the Grey Rock method. And so this may be something very interesting to explore sometime, but it seems to me that perhaps ODD could even be another way, like a different side of the coin or a different way of looking at narcissistic behaviors, as a different way of approaching it, a different way of managing it, perhaps. We're not here to delve into that right now, but I wanted to bring that up. That's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, definitely not having an opinion or having an attachment to the outcome is a big trick, just in autism in general. Mm-hmm. Not having too strong of an opinion either way. I don't care if you wear your red shoes or your blue shoes, like, but what shoes do you want? And I don't have to have an attachment to the outcome and just trying to gain cooperation. And like I said, we have a whole training that where I go over all the phrases you want to use, or phrases that you want to avoid, what are some strategies. And so that's some of the things that we do as autism coaching.
So can you talk about applied behavior analysis, ABA therapy?
So first, let's preface this, that Cheryl and I really don't technically have a strong, like, we will tell neurotypicals why autistics really don't like ABA, and we can get into the problematic history. But for our coaching, we're just working with families and individuals. And one of the things that we work with is the therapy working for your kid, right? And so we don't have an opinion about it. It's therapist to therapist, and we will definitely get into that. So where did I first hear about ABA therapy? Was I'm studying for my bachelor's degree in environmental science, and I learned about it in an animal behavior class. And when you talk to people about it, they might mention the Nazis. And that's a great social justice reason for not really wanting to support ABA. But I learned about it before the Nazis. So it kind of originates in the 1800s. When St. Bernards in the Swiss Alps were being trained. And so the roots of it are actually in animal training, for circus training, for Indians with elephants, how they utilized elephants in their work and utilized St. Bernards in the Swiss Alps. So there's the roots of it in the 1800s is animal training. And it was the Nazis who looked at that and said, can we apply this to autistic children and make them better workers? And so that's really where that comes from. So that's the huge reason why a lot of autistic people are against it, because it's not even based on human psychology. And even if it was based on human psychology, it would be based on neurotypical human psychology. So it's a scale, but there's the negative negative and the positive positive. And to this day, ABA is such an umbrella term that there is still ABA therapists that use shock therapy treatment on children. And so even if you are a positive ABA therapist, we don't know going into it what type of ABA therapist you are or what your approach is.
It's a lumping factor. They all kind of get lumped in together, unfortunately.
So we do talk with parents to be like, okay, if they're using an ABA therapist. And so in your interview with Sarah, she talked about how the kids loved it and the kids wanted to go back and that it was autism affirming. So she did her research and she looked into the and that they were using it for a safety reason, not this 40 hours of ABA therapy so that my kid learns to play with your kid. I hate that meme. I hate that meme. Why? Just let them play like a neurodivergent child. Like, why does it have to play like a neurotypical? So that is one of the main problems why people with autism are so wary of it, because
there's a stigma.
So are you going to get a positive therapist or are you going to get an electric shock therapist? And you don't know which is which. So you really have to be careful when looking for an ABA or utilizing ABA therapy for your kid. If they don't have good communication, you really need to be in touch with your child. So if it's something like they change of behavior, they don't want to go to the therapist, you really need to look at that. Parents will usually pick a therapist that lines up with their parenting approach. So if you get a set of parents that already punish, that already do the obedience thing, who already spank their kids, then they're going to be more okay finding that punishment ABA therapist and finding that person in alignment with them. And then if you're somebody like Sarah, who wants your kid to be positive, engaged, then that's the type of therapist that they're going to be looking for. So we, even if it's not ABA, because even I took speech therapy when I was 6 years old, and my first speech therapist would flick my lips when I made a mistake. And I stopped talking. And that was the big red flag to my mom, because if you know me, I talk a lot. And I did not shut up. Yeah, I did not shut up as a little child. So when I started not talking and stopped talking, mom kind of asked that about it. And I said, well, she flicks my lips. I was getting bruising around my lips. And so once mom figured that out, she went down to the school. And within the next week, I had a whole new therapist. And then I started making leaps and bounds of progress in speech therapy. So we're not even talking about just ABA therapy. Speech therapy, any type of therapy, can be toxic, can be good for you, can be bad for you, can be. But how it's about you lining up with a therapist that works for you and yourself. And we hope to guide parents kind of away from that punishment reward paradigm and start leaning in towards the connection and leaning into the relationship and the positive aspects of autism and focusing on their strengths instead of wrestling with their weaknesses. Because you don't have, it doesn't have to be this hard. It does not have to be this hard. Just flow with it. So instead, we use something called the PERMA method. And this was started by Martin Seligman. I don't know if I'm saying that right. S-E-L-I-G-M-A-N. Right here.
Seligman,
Martin Seligman. And it's a theory of well-being that started with positive psychology. And positive psychology is not very old, because historically speaking, most doctors would study mental illness, but not mental wellness. So what Martin did was establish the Positive Psychology Center and started to study happiness. And what makes human beings well, mentally well? What makes us happy? What makes us more grounded? And so we use the PERMA method because it's for human beings and it's for all human beings, neurotypical, neurodivergent, however, doesn't matter what your special needs are, that everybody in their life needs these five elements in order to be happy. And so PERMA stands for positive emotion, engagement, relationships, such as being supported, loved, and valued, meaning, adding purpose to their life and to the activity, and accomplishment and achievement, such as setting goals. So if you take the PERMA method, you can take the PERMA method and apply it to an ABA. And it's evolutionized into a more positive role, and it's going into a different directions where they're saying, okay, we need to be, this studying of mental wellness is showing that we need all of these things, this engagement, the relationships, having positive reinforcement is more effective than punishment. And if you've never tried doing it positive, you think you have to punish kids into acting a certain way, or you rely on obedience, then you're not going to get that outcome that you think you're going to get, or have that positive relationship with your kid. If you feel like you're fighting your kid all the time, that feels awful. And I would hate for families to have that relationship with their neurodivergent child.
For sure.
So, you know, if they have questions, you know, parents are sitting here listening to this, they're like, okay, so how do I know, you know, I'm confused and I'm concerned. Is my ABA good? Is my ABA bad? You can sit down and request to sit down with the therapist before you hire them and say, what skills do you work on? What is your emphasis with teaching this child? And if they come up with all of these things that make them acceptable to neurotypicals, such as, oh, eye contact, certain conversation things, stimming, you know, we try to extinct the stimming stuffs, you know, because that makes people uncomfortable. Those are red flags. What you want to hear is like life skills, you know, brushing their teeth, brushing their hair, kind of keeping a schedule as they get older, tying their shoelaces, you know, skills like that, that they're going to need every day. Like, we're not here to fix them. We're just trying to teach them skills that they need that come naturally to everybody else.
And help the parents pivot.
You have coach, speaker, advocate, consultant on your website. Then you have keynote, abuse prevention, PDA, ODD, meltdowns, de-escalation techniques, autism and sleep, co-occurrences, and other stuff all on your website.
So we do presentations. They can be they're $100, but we do presentations and we do trainings, and we can go into either professional training or therapist or whoever kind of wants to hear this new view of autism. And we have different topics that they can learn from. Somebody said, oh, I do talks for the Senior Action Network. And they asked us about, well, what does autism have to do with seniors? And I was like, everything, because how many undiagnosed grandparents are out there, or how many grandparents are now having grandchildren getting diagnosed with autism, and their view of autism is that old 1950s institutionalized nonverbal. But as we learn more about what autism is and isn't, and more people are coming to the table with their autistic views and voices and saying, no, this is what autism is, more and more people are getting diagnosed and late diagnosed.
Yeah. So basically, anybody could come to y'all and go, hey, we would like to have a training or have a coaching session, one-on-one or for a group, anything.
Oh, anything from obviously parent education to first responders education, you know, what it looks like to come up to an autistic person, what it looks like, if, you know, they're not listening to you, so let's not tase them. This is an autistic person. How to recognize that. What it's like to have, you know, how to be a better employer for autistic people, how to handle autistic clients, you know, basically just about anything autism related, businesses, organizations, families, you know, we can cover that.
And so what are the charges for the services?
We have a $50 membership that's online. We have 1 month of programming for that. And it's $50 a month. We feel that's very reasonable. We're trying to keep it low so that it's accessible to families. So in our first month, we really talk about the genetic aspect. Does the parent themselves also have autism? So do they need to be putting autistic supports in for themselves, not just their child?
So you sort of do an evaluation when you're working with a family.
Right. And we have a questionnaire that when they first come in, one of the first assignments is a giant questionnaire where we talk about what your pain points are, what your issues are, how many autistics are there in the family, if you suspect
dynamics,
family dynamics, older siblings, younger siblings, and we really get into it. And we have a once a month group chat to just check in with everybody. But we have a group that's on our website, and everybody's going through the same journey. There's writing assignments. And so you'll see people writing in the group about what their experiences are, what their pain points are, and you'll be able to hear back from other families that are going through the same thing, and they're going through their own assignments. And so it's that level of vulnerability and that level of accountability of how are we approaching this?
and checking our attitudes and checking our egos at the door and saying we really want to be able to work with them and support them. And I love that parents that are now coming into their autism journey are getting more of an autism first point of view than parents did in the past. But it's not enough, and I don't think it's loud enough. And so we're just out here kind of doing our thing, and we love doing the keynote. We have a $50 a month membership, and we have $100 per presentation. And it can be on whatever topic you want. Everybody benefits from understanding autism better.
Yeah.
Period. So we can tie it into everything because autism affects everything.
For sure.
People are everywhere that are on the spectrum, in the spectrum of humanity. And so it's great to build understanding, build bridges between neurodivergence and neurotypicals, and just wanting to be there to support them. And so if it's just $100 presentation, you can either pick from the list that we already have, or if you already have an idea about what you want us to talk about, you know, just reach out to us, ask. We will make it make sense and we'll make it work. And then you get the group support, you get us in there. We will answer your questions, and then a once a month live call where we check in with you and you get to ask us.
So they can basically reach out to you anytime over phone, text, email, check in or ask questions. And then you still have but that's like a brief, like, hey, this is happening. How do I deal with this in this moment?
Oh, yeah. They can ask the group. So we have the group is back there. And so if you ask a question in the group, we'll respond. Other families will respond and you'll get everybody's take. And I am such a big proponent of low-tech, easy solutions and solution-based thinking. We're not going to sit here and complain about the situation for too long. I hate that. We're going to look at solutions. And if you're on a wait list, we want to be able to help you and get some practical things in place so that you're not waiting 2 years in order to get the support that you need from a therapist or anything like that.
That's awesome. Do you have any upcoming events or talks, anything coming up?
Well, she does.
Yeah, we are in talks with OUUC. I have been cleared to say that we are in talks.
The Olympia Unitarian Universalist Church.
Yes, so OUUC.org. And we are in talks with kind of using them as a location. We have some working with some local places about para support groups, and then actually autistic support group, autistic adult support group, and having a space for classes and support groups. Because part of the issue is schools don't want us because we homeschool. And churches, people are a little nervous to go into, and community buildings have rent and high rent and might be not affordable for things. And so I was approached by one of the board members. And so we're just in the infancy of this idea, but kind of hoping to do a showcase of the autistic Maslow's triangle, because what happened is we have a lot of agencies and organizations that kind of want to work with us, and they started requesting, their boards started requesting, oh, can we have a free presentation? Can we have a free presentation? Can we have a free presentation? So instead of just doing a whole lot of free presentations for 4 to 5 people, that's a board per board, whatever, one of the things I'm hoping to do, I want to manifest it just like we manifested this radio show, that they're doing a showcase for all the area agencies for where we share the autistic Maslow's triangle, and they get to come and see the space, and wanting to, as programs are getting their funding cut and locations cut and contracts are being ended, and there's a lot of fear surrounding how autism resources are going to look going forward, that they kind of want to support the marginalized community of folks. That's what we're kind of working towards, hoping for, having this showcase, and then seeing what comes out of that, what agencies want to work with OUC or with us. But I do want to try and get everybody in the same room so that we can start talking and get some inner organizational programs going and teaming up and coming together to support the autism community of the South Sound in a powerful way, in a way that we need to be coming into action moving forward and asking ourselves how we're doing that.
Where can people find an announcement about that?
You can follow us on our Facebook page, or if you are an organization that you think you want to get involved with that, you can reach out through our website. So yeah, but at the end of the day, it depends on the date and stuff. So keep your Friday evenings open, guys.
So I never specified, but are you? You're a for-profit business?
We are a for-profit. Yeah, so there's you can volunteer. So we don't have an actual like office where you can come in and help us do, you know, social media or something like that. But we are trying to write a book. If you have any editing skills, any cover art, any experience publishing a book, any kind of social media help, anything that you think that you can help us with is greatly welcomed. Donations, 100% of them would go back into the business. One thing that it would go towards is the website. We want our website to be kind of our hub rather than the Facebook group. And we need it to do a lot more things, but that takes plugins and apps, which takes money. So it would go into updating upgrading our tech. The other thing that you brought up, that, you know, what if that $50 isn't in their budget? We can provide scholarships if we have enough donations. If people cannot front that $50, I would like to do college scholarships in the future. Like, this is, you know, I have an autistic daughter and she goes to the community college, and we went to the financial people. And I was like, hey, do you have any, she does not qualify for FAFSA. Do you have any scholarships for autistic individuals? Oh, you have to go to the disabilities office for that. I go to the disabilities office. You have to go to the financial office for that. Nobody has any information on any kind of college scholarships for autistic people. That is something that I would like to be able to provide. You know, we need donations for that. You know, there's so many ways that you can help, and pretty much all of it will go straight into the business. We're not here to line our pockets. We are going to get, you know, we do have our time that we're putting into it, but we are mostly here for the business and for, you know, just growing it and growing it and growing it. Right now we're in Washington and North Carolina, but what's stopping us from going and giving talks in Michigan or Nebraska or New Mexico, you know, nothing.
If people are like, yes, we really want to support this message and we really want to support spreading the triangle, how can we help? Like, reach out and tell us what it is that you want to do. Because I need like physical help to go do events because I have MS. And so I'm really limited on the physical things that I can do over here.
I can't help her.
Right. So if we go to a conference and we have a table at a conference for a weekend, it's just me, right? And it's just me by myself. And I don't have a second person to come with me. And some of these conferences require a second person at your table so that you can go eat or go to the bathroom.
Wow, that's tough. You really need some volunteers, don't you?
Is there anything else you would like to share?
There's so much, like, because, you know, when you're passionate about something, like, you could just talk all day about it. So it's really hard to just pick out, you know, things. But I think that you did a really good job with your questioning and stuff that we really were able.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So how do people connect with you? Where do they find you?
We are on Facebook, Neuro Spicy Sisters Autism Coaching. We have our website, www.nsautismcoaching.com. You can email me at Alex, that's Alex.Steffens, Steffens, @gmail.com. And so, yeah, we have a website and you can reach out to us. And our phone number is 360-726-2475. Again, that's 360-726-2475. Message us, call us, text us, email us. We check in on everything.
Well, thank you both so very much. I'm so very glad it worked out.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it for today's resource report produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org.
You can also find our shows archived indefinitely on rss.com/podcasts/resource-report.
Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.